Let's give it a try here on what, how morality functions, how religion functions, and the relationship between the two of them. Let me cite a couple of items from Shantung Compound. Again, you need not have read it. I'm just going to use Gyalkyi's comments here as a point of departure for our discussion. When Lang and Gyalkyi arrived in Shantung Compound with the rest of them, the job was, as a group together, to establish a kind of society for themselves. The Japanese guards didn't enter into a lot of the arrangements of day-to-day affairs. The Japanese guards just prevented them from leaving. So the group had together to put together their own society. And the first, at first, Lang and Gyalkyi was terribly impressed with how vital practical skills were. And for a while, he had a real confidence that that if you just had folks who knew how to do things, you had all you needed in order to establish and run a society. And then, as it was a bit of a crisis for him, because he was a theologian and philosopher by training and didn't know much in the way of practical skills, and he said, are these things, is theory really necessary at all? You know, and what about these other things, these other subjects, and this other knowledge? Is it really necessary at all? But after a while, he changed his mind on the basis of the experience in the camp. And so he writes on pages 75 and 76, gradually, however, as I encountered more and more unexpected problems in my work in housing, I began to realize that this confident attitude toward things, namely that you can kind of technologically, or with skills, with practical skills, which anyone can acquire, you can put together society. This confident attitude toward things simply did not fit the realities of camp life. It was not that our material crises seemed any less urgent or that our minds were any less capable of dealing with them. Rather, new sorts of problems kept arising that improved know-how could not resolve. For over and over, what we can only call moral or spiritual difficulties continually cropped up. Crises occurred that involved not a breakdown in techniques, but a breakdown in character, showing the need for more moral integrity and self-sacrifice. The trouble with my new humanism, I found myself deciding, was not its confidence in human science and technology. It was rather its naive and unrealistic faith in the rationality and goodness of those who wielded these instruments. If the courage and ingenuity of people were evidenced in every facet of camp life, equally apparent was the intense difficulty all of us experienced in being fair-minded, not to say just or generous, under the hard pressure of our rough and trying existence. But most important of all, what became increasingly plain was that these crises of the soul were not of such a character as to disturb merely the prim and straight-laced in our midst, on a critical level equal to an outbreak of dysentery or a stoppage of our bread supply. These moral breakdowns were so serious that they threatened the very existence of our community. It became increasingly evident to me that unless these inward crises could be resolved, the entire microcosmic civilization which we had so painstakingly established to feed and care for us would not live much longer. I began to see that without moral health, a community is as helpless and lost as it is without material supplies and services. This was the deepest lesson I learned from this experience. Since that time, both in studies and in observation generally, it has seemed to me to be a truth validated over and over in the life of every human society, great or small. I underscore that. I began to see that without moral health, a community is as helpless and lost as it is without material supplies and services. Well, why is moral health vital to a community? What does morality do? How does it function socially? If you just accept Yoki's conclusion here, that this adequately reports on the experience of the folks in the compound. What does morality provide? What does it do? How does it function psychically and socially? That's one way to get at what it is. That's the question I'm raising. Yeah. He certainly wants to say that that's important.
Well, it provides so much the framework for how other things are carried out. He uses the example of technology, that unless you have a framework that says how technology is employed, the whole community is threatened. If your framework is in the hands of what he says evil people or irrational people, then all the technology in the world won't do you any good unless you have a moral framework for how to apply it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Pat?
It has something to do with the relationship between the individual and the community.
For example, or such as? Or?
Well, just the...
So what, as they keep asking here? put it this way, these are all important parts of the describing, but let me just ask the question a little bit differently. What problem for society, for the creation of it and the sustaining of it, or for the creation and sustaining of community, does morality seek to address or to solve?
Justice?
The relationship of the individual.
Well, getting at Pat's point, the relationship of the individual to
the
community.
Practical aspect of morality leads to how many policemen you need in the community. The level of morality bearing on the number of policemen you need.
Justice Warren, Earl Warren, said that law. And I would substitute the word society, but stay with Warren a minute. Society floats on a sea of ethics. I'll substitute morality there. Or said that law floats on a sea of morality. If all the policemen in the world wouldn't create or sustain a viable society unless you have a commitment on the part of the people to respect law. Itself. I mean, is that foundational?
Yeah, there's some communities in our country here that the police force is practically nil.
Yeah.
They don't need it.
Yeah. Let me share with you a piece on the nature of morality by Philip Reif. Philip Reif is a sociologist, also the author of one of the really classic biographies of Freud. Consider how moral orders have worked from the oldest societies known to the very present. In every culture, guides are chosen to help, and the language is sexist here, but to help men conduct themselves through those passages from one crisis of choice to another that constitute the experience of living. A culture, in fact, survives only as far as the members of a culture learn how to narrow the range of choices otherwise open to them. Safely inside their culture, more precisely the culture safely inside them, members of it are disposed to enact only certain possibilities of behavior while refusing even to dream of others. It is culture, deeply installed as authority, that generates depth of character. And character must involve the capacity to say no. A man can only resist the multiplicity of experience if his character is anchored deeply enough by certain values to resist shuttling endlessly among all. These values forbid certain actions and encourage other actions. And they express those significant inhibitions that characterize us all alike in a culture. It is by virtue of these values and their shared character that members of the same culture expect each other to behave in certain ways and not in others. To prevent the expression of everything, that is the irreducible function of culture. I'll read that again. To prevent the expression of everything, read in Gyoki's case, chaos. That is the irreducible function of culture. By the creation of opposing values, of ideals, etc., a seal is fastened upon the terrific capacity of man to express everything. Even now, with all their experience of default among candidates for the office, ordinary men still crave guides for their conduct, and not merely guiding principles. Abstractions will never do. Values have to be exemplified in order to be taught, or at least vital examples must be pointed to in a sense of indebtedness encouraged toward the imitation of these examples. Now, I personally don't agree with Reif's emphasis, only that morality functions as culture's way to say no. I do agree with him that morality functions as culture's way of putting a check upon the terrific capacity of human beings to express everything. That it is I think this is a very Freudian way of looking at society. It says that if you let people act on the basis of their ids, that you will have simply chaos. And that will be destructive, self-destructive of all. And so that's where he's coming from, that Freudian conviction that we are capable of expressing everything, and the result of expressing everything is chaos. I think morality is a way of both restraining some actions and encouraging others that we desire. And it's that saying yes, that directing behavior in positive as well as constraining behavior is important.
Larry, if you have a directional individual expressiveness.
Not necessarily, because that's what you may teach the next generation to do. That may be the way you direct behavior. You may encourage expressiveness. That may be your moral guidance. Yeah, it's still constraining. It's still saying no to some things. Let me pose something to you here. Let's say we're in Holden compound. All right? Let's say that we can't leave. Let's say we've got to fashion a society here together. Let's say that we do have some collection of skills in this community, and we've got some collection of material resources. Let's also say, however, that we don't come with any culture behind us. Let's say we're the first human beings and we find ourselves in Holden compound. So we do not have moral guidance to draw upon. We didn't bring moral character with us. And let's describe these as the conditions of shared human conditions. I put them on the board here. Let's say we have limited knowledge and limited intelligence. We've got some, but we don't know everything. All right? Let's say that we have limited rationality. That is, we can do something to manage our affairs wisely, but we can't always get everybody to agree. And even when we do get everybody to agree, we don't always agree to what are in fact wise things. It's limited rationality. Let's also say that we have limited sympathy for others. We have some, but it's limited. All right? Let's say that there is some competition within our ranks. with others, and there's some limited cooperation for common ends. It's not unlimited. There's competition, there's some cooperation. Let's say that people are vulnerable to interference, intervention in their lives by other people. We interact with one another. Let's say that we're going to fashion this society now, but we don't know what our place will be in this society that we're going to fashion together. You don't know whether you're going to be what place you're going to have, whether you're going to run things or whether you're going to be garbologist or whether you're going to be in the kitchen crew. You don't know what place you're going to have in the society that we fashion. Okay. How shall we guide our behavior so as to create and sustain a viable society that includes all of us? What will we do together as a group to make for at least survival and maybe a good society in a limited world? Let's just use that. What would you end up doing? How would you order your life together to assure at least survival and hopefully a good sustainable society, given those conditions of limits?
You're assuming that we have the capability to order our life.
Yeah, I'm assuming.
We have a Lord of the Flies situation.
All right, good start. What would you name what you just suggested? Let me try a name.
Parental guidance.
Yeah. Let me try one other name. Morality. All right. Okay, Janet, what else would you do?
The first thing Mary did was make. I would oppose that if I was in society with Mary.
I mean, leave on the next bus. There isn't any next bus. I thought I told you that. There's no next bus. If you're going to have to live together, and now you've got some. Marilyn doesn't like Mary's suggested rule.
Because it's a rule.
Because it's a rule. Okay, Dan?
I mean, we're going to have different approaches to this, and you're going to have to work with each other's...
Okay, you're going to have different approaches, and somehow we're going to have to work with that. All right.
I don't want to lose what they're saying, but I have a feeling, especially after reading Gyoti, that our first agenda together would be setting up some way of surviving. I mean, we worry about distribution of food, where we're going to live, those things before we started... And then I think
you have to assure your survival. We know we all want that goal. Yeah.
Then concerns about behavior will very much emerge out of that process.
Yeah. But I started by saying that his experience was that their problems arose after they had organized things in such a way that they could sustain the society materially. And those problems that arose threatened to undo even the survival requirements. Then what do you do? Now, Marilyn says we've got to work, when there is some conflict here, even about how to decide what to do, we're going to have to work out ways of handling
that. Are you assuming that there is a system?
You're saying that the group ought to commit themselves to each other?
Understand that.
Let me give a try here at saying how morality functions and what it's trying to do. And I'm going to I worry about time. I don't know really what to do about this. I'm going to share with you a effort to describe how morality functions from a book by David Little and Sumner Twist called Comparative Religious Ethics. This is their short definition of morality, what morality is up to. Morality aims to guide human conduct so that cooperative living is possible. How does it guide human conduct? In other words, what the problem that morality solves or addresses is the problem of cooperation. The problem that morality addresses in society is the problem of cooperation. It aims... Well, that's the... let me go on, Vernon. How does it guide human conduct? If it aims to guide human conduct so that cooperative living is possible, it guides it by a shared system of expectations for regulating behavior. What morality provides is a set of expectations for regulating behavior. Some of those expectations are like re-emphasized, really restraints or constraints, saying no among the myriad possibilities. But some of those expectations are very positive ones. But all of them are expectations for regulating human behavior. So if you didn't have morality already, you'd have to invent it. And some of what was going on in Chantung Compound was working out a shared system of expectations for guiding behavior. So morality has to do with relational action, action between human beings or between human beings and other aspects of their environment, when people and groups of people, their lives impinge upon one another. Now, why do you need to regulate behavior? Why do you need to guide human conduct so that cooperative living is possible? And if you take a look at Chantung Compound, if you say that that accurately reflects our lives, what you see is a life composed of self-interested, competing, and conflicting groups and persons. Without morality, and some other institutions as well, used to regulate behavior, like law, functions differently, but it's related, there would be something akin to what Thomas Hobbes saw as the natural condition of a war of all against all, or what Freud saw as a kind of unlimited expression of everything. But ask it again, why do you need to regulate behavior? Why all those committees and meetings and division of labor and passing around of authority in Chantung Compound? Can we say anything about the human condition that, other than that people apparently do not naturally live harmoniously with one another? And Little and Twist say that what morality does is contribute to the amelioration of certain aspects of the human condition. What are those aspects of the human condition? And those are the ones I've listed. If you have limited knowledge, intelligence, limited rationality, limited sympathy for others, competition, limited cooperation, people vulnerable to interference and intervention by others, not knowing what their place in society is going to be, what then do you do? You arrive at guides, gauges for living with one another under such conditions.
You're making a distinction between law and morality.
Yeah, yes, I am. I said morality and other institutions such as law regulate behavior. There, we can talk about, there's a complex relationship, but they are different. So, listen then, the object of morality is to contribute to the amelioration of the human condition by resolving the problem of cooperation, to contribute to the betterment of human condition or the improvement of human condition by solving that problem of cooperation, and thought and attitude and action are all engaged. It does that by shaping character and guiding action. But by means of what? What does morality use to shape character and guide action to solve problems of cooperation? Long list here. Some of the guidance is by means of principles or rules. Mary suggested that maybe everyone agree on one. Her example was a rule. Society does use rules, principles, prescriptions, commands, all kinds of sort of statements in the imperative mood. We get that all the time. Even we say things in the indicative mood, but it really translates into the imperative. We're giving a rule or a guidance or prescription or command. That's what most people think of when they think of morality.
Do you think it's possible to have a community?
I don't think they will do it all on consensus. I mean, granting authority may be what we're not talking about consensus as a model, are we?
No.
Or are you just asking whether it's possible?
I was just wondering.
We will always do some sorting out and assigning. But that can be done on consensus. I don't know, you'd have to start talking about scale. I mean, how many people are involved?
Be a perfect society.
No, she's not. Where are you going with the question, Mary?
Well, I was just sitting here thinking about it.
The terrific capacity of people to express everything.
I thought it was tying into what you were saying, but obviously.
Consensus is one way that a group might decide to achieve cooperation. But then even that has to be nurtured, and morality would have a part in choosing that way and carrying it out. But I think your subject is a different one. If there is that one way, you want to know what the limits are, the possibilities are.
What were you talking about, Mary?
I thought I was talking about what morality used to address the problem of cooperation, which comes up in every society. And I was saying that here's part of a partial list. Sometimes we use rules, principles, guides, prescriptions, commands, so that we teach kids and we tell each other, you ought to do this, you should do that. That's not the only stuff of morality, although often people associate that. Lots of times we're guided by fables and parables and folk tales and proverbs and stories and narratives and ritual and sharing lessons of experience. That's also morality. That's the stuff of morality.
And also still saying you should do this, but it's saying it in a different way.
Yeah. It's still talking about what is good, what is right, what is desirable, what is wrong, what is evil, what is undesirable. It is exactly that. That's why I'm saying that's part of morality. When you read those stories, those fairy tales, to kids, or you read the scripture, whether or not you draw an explicit lesson at the end, you intend to teach. You intend to shape and guide behavior in order that there can be the conditions for living together. Morality has that function to address the conditions for living together. Other things do too, but that's what morality is about. Motives, attitudes, emotions, habits of character, etc. So it's action guiding to make for cooperative living. I had an interesting conversation with observing Jews about dietary laws and other rituals that he carried out. We sometimes don't think of those things as part of morality. He put his left shoe on first every time, and then his right shoe. He prepared only selected foods and prepared them in only approved ways. So I asked him why. It wasn't simply because it was always so, tradition for its own sake. It was because all of these are the small but necessary things to learn, some things that God would have us to learn if we are to live. as human beings. We have to learn discipline. We have to learn gratitude. We have to learn restraint. We have to learn care. We have to learn reverence. We have to learn responsibility. We have to learn to be satisfied with limited resources and limited knowledge. And we can only learn these by practicing daily habits. That was his case. That's why he did it. Those dietary and ritual laws were an expression of morality. What morality does. You have to nurture certain dispositions and attitudes in people if we are to solve the problem of cooperation that arises from these conditions of human existence. I don't think Christian morality and ethics does anything different from that. It shares that with other ethics. So bedtime stories for three-year-olds, celebration of the Eucharist again and again, the homage symbols and images of a society. You may or may not like them. Football giants are for males and cheerleaders for females. I'm just saying all that stuff is the stuff of morality functioning in society. Role models. It's the way humans beings address that problem. Now, there's much more to say. We'll say a couple more things. We can specify morality more closely and carefully. It involves a certain class of acts, emotions, thoughts, attitudes, and they all have one thing in common. They all impinge upon human welfare, or the welfare of the environment in which humans find themselves. And they all have to do with the effects of the behavior of one person or group or several groups on one another. So human welfare and human relationality are always involved in all of this. That's because of this task of morality and always impinging on human welfare and always involving human relationality. It's probably the reason why you get common issues, moral issues, in whatever society that appears in whatever place at whatever time. There is in every society and every group some regulation of the behavior between sexes, for example. There is always a prohibition of indiscriminate or simply arbitrary conduct, or especially negative things, cheating, lying, stealing, the employ of violence. There's always some kind of effort to regulate that. Now, you may try and regulate it on a double standard. We see that happening in Shandong compound all the time. It's all right to do it for the in-group, but it's wrong to do some things in an in-group, but wrong for others. But there is always some kind of effort to regulate, prohibit of indiscriminate or simply arbitrary behavior. There's always some kind of recommendation of certain attitudes that are really requisite for human life together. Trustworthiness. I think Janet mentioned trust at the outset. Truth-telling. If I called the operator in the morning to find out what time it was, and the tape said, the time at the tone will be 3 minutes before the hour. Beep. And then I called back. I forgot what was said. Was it 3 minutes or was it five till? So I called back 30 seconds later, and I said, and I listened, and the tape said, the time at the tone will be 25 minutes after the hour. Beep. And then I called back 2 minutes later, and the tape said, the time at the tone will be 15 minutes before the hour. Beep. What would we do? If you cannot assume that people most of the time are telling the truth, you cannot do anything in a society. If it were just utterly arbitrary, whether a statement that you heard, any statement, all statements, were truth or true or false, You couldn't do anything. There are prerequisites for living together, and such truth-telling is one of them. Probably caring for one another, probably shouldering responsibility. You can name them. They all have to do with morality. So nurturing or recommending such as trustworthiness, truth-telling, caring, shouldering responsibility belongs to, shows common content in every society, at every time. You name a society that didn't teach people to tell the truth, at least most of the time, and then tried to say when there might be morally worthy exceptions. But the rules have to be that most of the time you must tell the truth. So there have been common content that has to do with utterly fundamental requirements for living together, and that constitute the content of morality. Now, I don't know, in the precious little time we have together, probably won't even start on religion and then the relationship between the two. But the question I would ask is what function, psychically and socially, religion plays, as well as this question of what is the social function of morality. Maybe we can pick up on some of that next time. Now, Holly, do you have your question, so what? I mean, this is a kind of naming of something that one can observe in the way of common sense, although it always ends up that when there's some reflection on it and some probing of it, there are so often some surprises. At least Shantung Compound was, the experience there was not what Langdon Gilkey expected. It didn't square with the kinds of views and attitudes, perceptions that he had when he came, when he discovered something about what morality is and how it functions, or discovered something about the shared human conditions and some misjudgments that he made about what those shared human conditions meant for how people need to arrange their life together. So read the piece by Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, or is it Townsend Kennedy? And are there any coming around yet? I did 25. Okay. And as you read it, I remind you, ask yourself, what is she saying about how morality and religion function in a society? Not only what is she saying about why liberals fear God, she happens to think that liberals' morality is not serving the function that is required for the good society, or for human cooperation toward the good society. And you will see one person say, having a sense for what morality and religion do in society. Anyone want to take on the question whether Christian ethics and morality is different from the general description that I've just described?
Right now?
Yeah, anytime.
Yeah.
Does it operate in the way that I've said?
You mean the podcast?
No, the address, what it addresses. To solve the problem of cooperation and to do it by all kinds of stuff? Okay. Praise the Lord, as we say in Methodist circles.
I mean, there doesn't seem to be any distinction. At least I can't see the distinction.
Even in content?
It is distinctive that following a Christian ethic is different than following an ethic. The thing that really struck me on that was, unless it's your blood be shed, the difference between Madame Bachman and Andrew Copeland.
All right. Good. I'm glad you brought that up, Eric. As you read the book, Blessed Innocent Blood Be Shed, note the relationship of religion and morality. And you will see that, at least in the view of André Trocmé and of many of the Huguenots in there, there was a direct connection between what they did in harboring Jews, their own experience of suffering, and what the understanding of Christian faith meant they should do, namely harbor Jews, even at cost and danger to themselves. So note the connection there. But now to pick up your point. Note also that Madame Trocmé, who, from the book's description anyway, is a kind of deep secular humanist, doesn't have any hesitation whatsoever in doing exactly the same thing that flow from religious grounds in the case of others. Now what then does that mean for the connection between the two? Now back to your question, in a general way I think you'd have to say the content of Christian ethics is the same. That is, there's still going to be an insistence on that those requisites for survival, truth-telling, trusting, caring, shouldering responsibility. So there's some kind of common content.